Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Contrary to what Rich says and McCain and all of the other Republicans who want us to interfere, you know, this is not about the United States. And I think everybody who talks about that we should be doing more, again, that just goes to the arrogance that has gotten us in trouble in the past.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, like a slave all day.
That was a chickadee from the Obama machine saying that isolationism is the new liberal policy. The chickadee said that we should say nothing about Iran. Want to hear it again? Here it
Contrary
is.
Contrary to what Rich says and McCain and all of the other Republicans who want us to interfere, you know, this is not about the United States. And I think everybody who talks about that we should be doing more, again, that just goes to the arrogance that
has gotten
us in trouble in the past.
Yes, yes. You're such a brilliant big mouth. Where they dig you up from? So there's a spokesmouth for the Obama failed machine, saying that, saying nothing about Iran, saying nothing about North Korea, saying nothing about human rights abuses in Darfur, saying nothing about North Korean ships carrying nukes, is actually a foreign policy that we should respect here in America, because that's the American way. The American way is not caring about the slaughter in Darfur. The American way is not caring about the harvesting of kidneys from protesters in China. The American way is not saying a word about Iranians being shot in the streets. Why, that's the liberal way. Well, it used to be the conservative way, isolationism, but apparently now it's the liberal way, because that's the way the commander-in-chief has decided to run his administration. What's interesting to me is that isolationism as a foreign policy is actually an old American idea, and it goes back to George Washington, who said in his farewell address that in regards to Europe, quote, "It must be unwise in us to implicate ourselves by artificial ties in the ordinary vicissitudes of our politics," blah, blah, blah. Basically, he was saying that we should avoid involvement in foreign affairs. Thomas Jefferson, the second president of the U.S., said in his inaugural address that the United States should have, quote, "peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none." And many of you actually still believe in that. The problem is that there were two edges, actually two parts to isolationism, which are fundamentally a conservative ideas. One was avoid entangling alliances, which you could say, well, therefore, let the Iranians do what they have to do. Let's pause right there for a minute. But the other side of isolationism is the idea of protectionism, which states that there should be barriers to trade and immigration. You'll notice that Obama is a conservative when it comes to isolationism, meaning hands off on Iran, hands off on Sudan, hands off on North Korea, hands off on China. But he continues to permit foreign companies to ruin our country with unadulterated junk products without trade barriers. And more importantly, he permits illegal aliens to flood into America. So you can't have it both ways unless you're Barack Hussein Obama and you owe the media. Own the media, excuse me. Or shall I say owe the media? Yeah, I actually was right. So let's look at the big picture. Iran, China, Darfur, Iran. Iran, China, Darfur, North Korea. So far, Obama has a zero on all of those. And many of you are applauding it, like the chickadee who got up and said that that's exactly the right thing. It would be arrogant for the United States to interfere in any manner. Well, we're not asking for military intervention in Iran. We are asking for moral intervention. Apparently, Obama has no morality to offer because he would have offered it already. But let's go to the bigger picture. Let's listen to the chickadee again, who appeared today on CNN saying that it would be arrogant to say a word in clip five, and then we're going to analyze it on the Savage Nation.
Contrary to what Rich says and McCain and all of the other Republicans who want us to interfere, you know, this is not about the United States. And I think everybody who talks about that we should be doing more, again, that just goes to the arrogance that has gotten us in trouble in the past.
Now, that's a Twitterer who belongs teaching junior studies somewhere at a junior college somewhere on a reservation in Guam, I would think. How in the world this idiot could wind up speaking for the Obama administration is quite worrisome, but that's a secondary issue. Let's take the chickadee at her words. She says Iran is not our problem. And it would be interventionism and meddling in order to say anything. Now, let's spin the clock back to 1939. By the same token, people were being rounded up in Nazi Germany. Yes, we're going to go back to that, boys and girls. And they would be being put into death camps. Jews, mainly Jews, and the gypsies, and the socialists, and the trade unionists, and any Catholic priest who stood up to Hitler. They were being put into concentration camps, worked to death, and then gassed. And you could say, well, it wasn't our business. You could argue it wasn't our business. But then again, it was our business. It was our business because by taking on Hitler at that time, luckily for us, the moron Hitler, the maniac, the narcissistic egomaniac Hitler, made the mistake of thinking he could fight two wars at once, and he invaded the Soviet Union. Luckily for us, the Soviets were willing to sacrifice 30 million people in order to defeat Hitler. Think of the number of people that I just said. Take the entire population of New York and treble it, and those are the numbers of people killed or who died in the Soviet Union fighting Adolf Hitler. We never could have beaten Hitler if we had fought him on one front. The fact of the matter is, Hitler lost because he was a narcissist and an egomaniac. But the fact is that because we meddled, because the United States under FDR intervened, Hitler was defeated. Had he not been defeated, you'd be speaking German or you'd be a lampshade. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com. I want to talk a bit about Iran today. We have an expert on at 30 minutes after the hour, who is going to tell you the difference between the Hitler of Iran, Ahmadinejad, and the other guy who nobody knows anything about. I believe it's Tukard Monty. Thus far, I actually think it's Tukard Monty, and it doesn't matter who wins, because it's still a mullah-controlled despot nation. It's not as though one is Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, and the other guy is a sterling, Western-loving individual. They're both heads of the same mullahs, I believe. But I want to see if I am correct, and therefore we invited an expert on. I generally only invite experts on if I don't know the answer to something, and so therefore I'd like you to share that with me. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com is the phone number. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation, starting in Sacramento, California. Uzi, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I think either Obama's a coward, or he's dumb, or he's evil. If he's a coward, he doesn't have the balls to punch. The door is cracked open right now. It's closing. He needs to punch through. If he's dumb, he's noting the 1963 overthrow. We don't want to meddle. All of those kids were born in the 80s. They could care less about the 1963. It's about life or death. Or if he's evil, if he's truly evil, he doesn't want the revolution in Iran. He wants to deal with the mullahs. The kids are ready to. It's not about the election, stupid. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I understand. Yes, there's a huge youth population in Iran because the mullahs, the evil mullahs, encouraged families to produce children so they'd have more cannon fodder for future wars. Remember, at the time they were encouraging these kids' parents to procreate, they were at war with Iraq, and they were running, a million Iranians were run through minefields, you know that, and slaughtered in Iraqi minefields by the vermin who run Iran, who care nothing about human life, by the way. And this very same evil mindset is running Iran today, in my opinion. You're right, these youngsters don't care one whit about radical Islam. They'd rather be left alone to develop their own lives in their own society. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I got an email from a kid, an 18-year-old kid from Iran. I was just surfing YouTube and just trying to make comments about that girl that died. And he's like, what's up with you Americans? Why aren't you guys doing anything? And he's saying, oh, we don't want
to... The reason we're not doing anything is because we have an impotent, communist socialist running America who is hard-focused only on promoting the neo-Marxist agenda on a domestic level. He only wants to turn America into a socialist nation. That is his one and only goal, and he's focused only on that.
And he doesn't understand that.
Now, wait a minute. You said something else that actually worried me and intrigued me because I get inklings of it myself. What if, and there's an awful lot of rumor mongering going around on the internet, what if Obama truly is on the side of evil? What if Obama truly wants the mullahs to win? What if Obama truly was elected as a result of bundled money coming in from Iranians, North Koreans, Syrians, and others? Is that what you're suggesting?
There might be a big suggestion. He doesn't know that if he takes down the mullah, the whole card goes down. Hamas will dry up. Hezbollah will dry up. Obama will have nothing to do. And
how could he take down the mullahs, though?
You got 67% of the people out there. That's our troops, is the young people in Iran. That's our troops right now.
What could America do? I'm not at all suggesting that we offer any military or such assistance. I am talking about moral assistance. But because Obama's a moral relativist who came up in America when there was no morality, when moral relativism became the religion of the liberal, he is morally relative when it comes to an actual fascist dictatorship right in front of his eyes.
Something along the lines of...
Nobody could say it better than I do. I'll be right back to say more.
Savage.
No one will benefit from closing his or her eyes to knives and cables, cutting into faces of mouths of our young and old.
Okay, some soundbite. Boy, I have some production. That's former Crown Prince of Iran, Reza Pahlavi. I believe he is the son of the ex-Shah of Iran, stating his support for the uprising and his disdain for the Ayatollah of Iran. Naturally, the liberals hate his guts. They love the mullah. See, this is the strange thing that you don't understand. The liberals in America today are actually secretly on the side of radical Islam. You don't understand this. It's something you'll never understand. Because liberalism presents itself as wanting liberation. They don't want liberation. They love dictatorship. They want absolute and total control. Because inside, they are tyrants. And they love tyranny everywhere. You don't understand this. And I think that's why Obama, the moral relativist, is double talking about non-interference, not meddling. I think it's total double talk. He's saying human rights in Iran is not his business. Well, it is his business. What's happened to America that it's not our business? What is his business? Pushing socialized medicine is his only business? Binghamton, New York. John, your opinion. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, you're absolutely right on the money. And another thing to like to bring up is there's absolutely no aid stations I see set up for these children to be killed and shot and beaten in the streets. At least Obama could do is stand up and call for the Red Cross or the Red Crescent to get in there and set up aid for these children that are getting beaten by their own government. I have yet to see one ambulance. I don't know if it's a conspiracy with the Iranian government to withhold medical aid from these children. But it's a moral shame that our president can't even speak up to at least allow aid to get in there and stop these kids from needlessly dying. I watched last night on TV. There was a young girl that died right on TV. There wasn't even a first responder near her or nothing.
Hmm. Obama has failed on the moral plane with Iran, and that's why his poll numbers slip rapidly. What is less well known is that he has failed to act in Darfur, which used to be a big liberal issue. It was a human rights issue where Christians were being slaughtered by Muslims in Darfur. Do you notice he's done nothing about that? Hillary Clinton goes to China and says nothing about human rights and democracy. What is that all about? This administration, you could say, is non-interventionist or isolationist. I don't believe it. I believe there's something more at stake here, and it's very worrisome. Thank you for the call. I believe Obama may be actually much less intelligent than many of his sycophants would have you believe. I think he has a superb speaking voice that is full of sound and fury without substance. I believe that you would actually, when you actually analyze Obama's words, which are not written by him to begin with, what you find are shallow rhetorical arguments without any substance whatsoever. This is known as sophistry. The sophist school of speaking was most pronouncedly evidenced by Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was a classic sophist. There have been others. And Obama is a classic sophist where he speaks eloquently and says nothing. But when you analyze what he's doing, it's even more worrisome. Let's talk about our own national security. Many of you are sitting here saying, I can care less about Iran. I believe many of you don't care one way or the other. And I understand the American isolationist trend, which is where you've had enough guys come home in body bags. We've had enough guys come home without limbs from Vietnam and from the Gulf War. What have we got to show for it? Virtually nothing. So many of you believe that it's okay to be isolationist, and I can accept that if that is your opinion. But please explain to me what he is going to do about North Korea, which very much does threaten our national security. You have Kim Jong-il floating a ship off Korea, which allegedly has nuclear weapons on it, shipping them to another Asian nation. And we have the sad imagery of a United States naval cruiser trailing the ship following an Obama engagement policy of hail and query. I never heard hail and query. Hail and query perhaps is the most laughable policy that has ever been forced to be engaged upon, engaged by the U.S. Navy. Do you know what hail and query means? Nothing. It is showing the absolute supine nature of the United States of America at a time when the United States of America must show force, not weakness. And so let's be clear. They can reach Hawaii. Or you say, well, it'll only splash in the sea. Tell that to the people living in Hawaii. What if he aims it at Alaska? You're going to laugh at it because it's aimed at Sarah Palin's state? You morons will laugh because it doesn't matter to you in New York or it doesn't matter to you in Washington? Well, it may matter to you. And I believe that the United States has the obligation, let alone the right, to not only board that ship, but if necessary, to sink that ship before those weapons on that ship can be armed onto a missile. That's what I think the military was created for. I don't think it was created to be a floating brothel or a floating, let's say, aid station for people without jobs. And under Obama, we have a Navy now that is incapable of doing anything except hail and query. Play the clip, please. Hail and query. I'm sure you can find that. I'm sure you have hail and query. Hail and query, hail and query, hail and query. Well, while the boys are searching for hail and query, we'll take a quick break and come back on the Savage Nation, where you will hear hail and query. We'll also have a guest who will tell you the difference between Ahmadinejad and the other Iranian whose name we don't even know.
Savage.
The whole world is watching what's going on in Iran, and the president gives a speech that is pure sophistry, saying that we shouldn't meddle because if we do, they'll turn it against us and blah, blah, blah. I don't buy it for a minute because with regard to China, Hillary Clinton goes there, if you remember 2 weeks ago. She makes no statements about human rights and democracy. With regard to Darfur, this administration, after much sound and fury during the campaign, does nothing. I don't think that this administration is as sharp as they pretend to be, number one. And I'm not going to take the approach that they're evil and they want this to go on. I think that there are a bunch of academics who are trying themselves out as they go along. But let's focus on Iran. Many of us say, well, we're on the side of the kids because we know Ahmadinejad is a psychopathic Hitler, the psychopathic Hitler of our time. But the real question is, what happens if the protesters do win and the other side actually gets the recount and they do win, which I think is not going to happen, by the way. How does that affect us? How does it affect the Iranian people? Is there a real difference? I don't know, but we have an expert who may be able to help us. Dr. Carafano is at the Heritage Foundation. Dr. Carafano teaches at West Point. He's a graduate of West Point. He served 25 years in the Army. He retired as a lieutenant colonel. He served in Europe, Korea, and the U.S. He knows what he's talking about. Let's listen to what he has to say. Dr. Carafano, thank you for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Good to be with you.
So, doctor, the other fellow in Iran, does he represent true reform, or is it a different face of the mullahs?
It's a different phase. I mean, this guy came out of the revolutionary tradition. It's like the difference between Stalin and Khrushchev. He's more pragmatic. He may not, cheer, people being stoned in the street for holding hands. But, at the end of the day, he's not interested in, creating a democracy or overturning the supreme leader or even stopping Iran's nuclear program.
Where does what is the other guy's name, by the way? I don't even know. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't remember it.
Yeah, it's Mousavi.
Okay, fine. Now I know that. I can act like I'm smart, like people on NBC, and repeat his name perfectly. Where does he stand with regard to the great Satan and the little Satan?
Well, he would actually like to have a friendlier face to the West. I mean, he campaigned strongly on that Ahmadinejad had alienated the West from Iran, made a lot of enemies, that part of the reason why the economy was doing so poorly was because of the economic sanctions that were being imposed. And this resonated with a lot of Iranians. A lot of Iranians are actually very pro-Western. They're actually very well-read, well-educated. It's demographically, compared to a lot of countries in Western Europe, it's a younger country. But Iranians have two lives. There's the public life, and then there's the private sphere. And in Iran, what goes on behind the closed doors in your old household, that's your own business. And when you go into Iranian homes, actually many Iranians are very Western in their tastes and things. And so his message of, we need to quit antagonizing the West, and like Ahmadinejad threatening, to melt countries down, denying the Holocaust, that's not getting us anywhere. And that message is resonating strongly with Iran. But we shouldn't.
Why does Ahmadinejad have such a hatred for Israel and the United States? I have had Iranians tell me that he's not even Persian, that he's not even of Persian origin. Can you speak to that?
Well, you kind of have the David and Goliath complex here. Here's a kid, that came, from a very low, economic strata, was put down all his life, isn't terribly well educated, and he really has a chip on his shoulder. And you raised the analogy with Hitler, but if you look at Hitler's life, it's this little squirmy kid that gets drunk with power and really is taking revenge for not being loved and respected. I mean, this is,
are you not talking about Obama, are you?
Ahmadinejad is almost in a class by his own and world leaders as being aggressive and really self-destructive. What people don't realize is Ahmadinejad is a great enemy. He's a great enemy of the Iranian people. He's done more to destroy the economy of Iran than anybody. I mean, basically, he's doing like Chavez in Venezuela. He's taking the oil money, and he's using it to basically run the country. They're, driving the economy into the gutter. He's redistributing wealth. And if it wasn't for the oil money, that country would be a basket case.
All right, I understand all of that. So the other fellow is a slight improvement from the point of view of America's national security issues. Let's be pragmatic, doctor. If the other guy wins, do we breathe easier about a nuclear war?
No. Because
no, we don't. In other words, he's still on a war path with the mullahs taking over the world and exporting radical Islam, the same thing Hezbollah and Hamas?
Because because he's the president, it doesn't mean he runs the country. Matter of fact, obviously, the supreme leader, who is kind of the religious guy, he, at the end of the day, is supposed to get the final say. But even underneath him, there are three different armies in Iran. There are intelligence groups. I mean, there are all kinds of people pulling different strings. The president of Iraq doesn't run everything. So if a new guy got elected president and he said tomorrow, I'm canceling the nuclear weapons research program, that doesn't mean it would happen.
All right. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to Americans who wins.
Well, we are slightly better off, and the Iranians are slightly better off with a less regime. But here's what's going to happen, which is you're not going to get this guy. They're going to go out on the streets, and they're going to really crack down on the protesters, and they're going to stop.
So we're going to see another Tiananmen Square. We've already seen, 18, 20, 100 dead? And so we've had a Tiananmen Square already, and they're going to get worse, right?
And the guys that are really going to have the power are going to be the extremists. They're going to say, see what happens when you give people a little freedom? And so the likelihood is we're going to have a government that is less friendly, less willing to negotiate. And here's what really, gripes me, is here's the Obama administration trying to preserve, well, we have to be able to dialogue with these people. Well, you know what? When this is said and done, those people are going to want to talk to you less, not more. So you're preserving the ability to talk to somebody that doesn't care what you think and isn't going to do anything different.
All right, Dr. Carafano, I see in your excellent resume that you have spent time in the military in Korea. I am not a military man, but I understand history. We have Kim Jong-il floating around nuclear weapons. We have the sad story of the United States Navy trailing the ship with an engagement policy that is allowed to go only so far as hail and query, which I've never heard of before until Obama came along. What's happened to the U.S. Navy that it can't board that ship and sink it if necessary to protect our national security?
Yeah, what it was, you know, this is another case. I mean, I think you have it exactly right. You know, this administration looks great when they can stage something, you know, a trip to Europe, and they can, you know, everything's kind of set piece and they can frame it so Obama's strengths really come out. But when it comes to moments of decision making and crisis, they look really weak and ineffectual. So here they make a declaration, well, we're going to search these ships. But then comes the other thing, if they let us. Well, that's a stupid policy to announce because, A, they're not going to let you, and, B, the hardest thing to do is to try to search a ship at sea. If they were really serious about interdicting stuff, what they would have done is trail the ship, let it get to the port of a country where we could deal with, and then they jump on it so the guy they'd be caught by surprise, and they do something for real. But, no, what they want to do is sound tough, knowing that they couldn't and weren't going to be tough. So they look like idiots.
Now, you went to the rank of lieutenant colonel during your service, 25 years in the Army. When did this policy change with regard to the Navy to this level of non-interventionism? Did this change under Bush?
No, I mean, it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you want to stop and search ships, I mean, that's the equivalent of an act of belligerence, right? So, you know, you can do that if you want, but that's a whole different kettle of fish. But, you know, what Bush did was very, very smart under what's called the Proliferation Security Initiative, was something they stood up, and which actually something Obama has continued, and I don't know why he just doesn't do that, which is you don't telegraph your moves to the other guy. You know, if you want to search a ship, then you set it up so the guy doesn't have any alternative, but you let you search a ship, or he can't move, or you can sink the ship. What you don't do is what they're doing now. There are other ways they could have dealt with this without changing laws or declaring war in North Korea, but they chose not to do that because they wanted to look tough, and instead they look stupid.
Last question of the day, Darfur. Obama sends General Scott Gratian to Sudan. Not to Sudan, and nothing is done. Why is it that the liberals who spoke so passionately about Darfur and the slaughter in Darfur are doing nothing now that they have the power?
Well, they're actually sitting around kind of staring at their hands, worrying, thinking, what are we going to do here? Because actually, if you looked at some of the on Iran, I mean, you know, people on the left have been as stunned as people on the right why the president couldn't just speak out in favor of the people of Iran. So,
yes,
I think they're sitting there going, they don't, because what are they going to do? Go back and embrace the policies of Bush? No. So they're trying to pretend like this is the president.
In other words, they're showing that they're not interventionists, so therefore they become isolationists, which is very interesting to me because isolationism is actually an old conservative policy, is it not?
Yeah, I tell you, you know, the one that really gripes me is some people try to, you know, put lipstick on the pig, and they said, look at what the people of Lebanon done. Because, you know, there was just recently an election in Lebanon where the moderates won. And they said, look what happened in Lebanon, and look at the people rising up in Iran. This is all because of Obama's public diplomacy and his speeches. He's rallying the people. That's ridiculous. I mean, that's unbelievably absurd. First of all, you talk about they want to have a more humble foreign policy, and so apparently people can't grasp for freedom unless Obama makes a speech. Well, that's nuts. And the notion that somehow because he made this speech is causing the protest, I mean, that is just strains credulity. I think even when they say it, you know, John Kerry said this. You know, even when they say it, I think they're really grasping for straws. And here's what we've discovered. I mean, this is not me. I'm nonpartisan. I'm not Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I don't even belong to a political party. This is just what we know, okay? When Obama can stage manage his interaction on the foreign policy stage, he looks very presidential and very decisive. Mm-hmm. When events jump upon him, he looks indecisive and weak, period.
Well, I agree with you, Dr. Carafano, but the take-home message, if I were to discuss this evening with someone over a beer, is that it really doesn't matter to us who wins in Iran, but Obama looks weak because he said nothing?
You know, I think it doesn't matter who won in Iran. Ahmadinejad's going to be the president. He's going to be an enemy of America, and Obama has done nothing to advance protecting this country against him. And let's not forget that this is a president that just cut $1.4 billion, 15% of the missile defense budget, while Iran has a regime that's going to be more radical than ever, and while their missile programs and their nuclear programs are moving.
Wait a minute. Isn't it the liberals who didn't want to fund Star Wars and were against missile defenses? And as I pointed out on the show Friday, it's the missile defense system that's been floated into Hawaii that might protect the citizens from a North Korean launch. How come the liberals in Hawaii don't say, take it away, we don't need it, turn it into basketball courts?
Well, you know, and you know what, you know, the last time the North Koreans did a missile launch back in April, Obama said, don't send the radar to sea, don't put the missile defenses on alert. And by the way, I don't like missile defense because it's not cost effective and it's not proven. And now all of a sudden, a couple of months later, he's a big fan of missile defense. And the you know, Secretary Gates is running around going, oh, we got there, our defenses are on watch and we got the radar up and we're all set to go. And then they turn around and they cut 15% from the budget, which is going to kill that program. The missile defenses that are going to protect us today, these guys are going to eliminate that program. It won't exist 5 years from now.
Do you think that the North Koreans are going to launch that rocket?
I think they'll launch a rocket. It's not going to have a warhead on it, which means even if it hits something, it wouldn't do a lot of damage.
It's saber rattling to show that they're players. But last question, Dr. Carafano, is this. Don't you believe, as I do, that North Korea is simply the junkyard dog of China?
Well, I'll tell you, I think this is a bigger problem. You know, people look at the threat of missiles from North Korea, and they look at the threat of missiles from Iran, and the truth is that's one missile program, and they are working on it together, and that someday they're both going to have a nuclear weapon and a missile, and someday they're going to say, you mess with Iran, then you're messing with North Korea, and vice versa. So, you know, when Bush talked about the you know,
axis of evil, he was 100% right. There is an axis of evil. I don't know what's so hard to figure out. There are nations where there's a relative democracy and freedom, and then there are nations which are absolutely totalitarian dictatorships. How hard is it to figure out?
Yeah, and you know, you go and you look at an Iranian missile that successfully test-fired, and then you look at the next North Korean test, and you know what? It looks a lot more like the Iranian missile. And then if the North Korean missile works, you go back and look at the Iranian program. And so they are learning from each other. They're sharing technology. They're working together. It's one enemy. And
you know what? I hope you can stay over the break. I'll tell you, I thought this would be a 5-minute interview, but it's rare that I have someone who knows what he's talking about to this extent. Doctor, when we come back, I'd like to ask you if you think Israel will act. And everyone says, well, they have to now, but will they act is the question. Or will we see a nuclear missile launched against Israel with the annihilation of the Jewish state? Right here on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage. Is really in a very dangerous place. We have Iran and North Korea right now center stage. Obama is taking a hands-off approach with regard to Iran, and he's saying that's a mark of strength. Well, most Americans see it as a mark of weakness. That's why his poll numbers are collapsing. Then we have North Korea, where again Obama is doing nothing, telling a Navy ship to just trail the North Korean ship and use a hail and query policy, and doing nothing. And now we have a question to present our expert, Dr. James Carafano, Ph.D. Dr. Carafano, again, welcome back to the Savage Nation. The issue is now one of Iran. Whoever wins, they're going to pursue the same anti-American, anti-European, pro-radical Islamic policies, basically, is what you're saying. What about Israel? They've claimed for years now that they have an existential threat to their existence. Do you think Israel will act unilaterally?
Well, I can tell you this. Talking to people who are familiar with what's going on over there, there was certainly a big debate within the Israeli government, even with Netanyahu in charge, about what their next step was and what they would do. I would say with this government in charge, and not just Ahmadinejad being reelected, but with the hardliners really gaining an upper hand in the country, I think the odds of an Israeli attack actually go up.
But does Israel have a choice but to act?
Well, you know, here's the challenge for them. You know, they don't have, in terms of, they can certainly get airplanes over there. Of course, Iranians are building up their missile defenses. So the longer the Israeli wait, the harder it'll be. But, you know, they don't have bombs that can, you know, deeply penetrate into these, you know, bunkers and things. So they can't take out everything. They don't have some of the intelligence that the U.S. can provide. So they could do a strike. They could probably do a strike. They could do some damage. They could put the program back. They'd probably get some grief, you know, in the Middle East, although most people quietly would be applauding and cheering that they put the Iranian program back a bit. They might get, you know, some one-off attacks from Hezbollah or Hamas, although they've been pretty crippled. So they could do it. They could get away with it. It would probably have a pretty good effect. And, you know, right now, you know, we used to say, no, don't do that, Israel, because if you do that, it's just going to rally the Iranian people behind Ahmadinejad. The truth is, if the Israelis did it now, there are people in Iran that would probably applaud.
Yeah, I was saying if Israel's going to act, they should act during this turmoil. It would, in my opinion, weaken Ahmadinejad, the Ahmadinejad faction and the Mullah faction. I don't think it would strengthen them, or would it? Or would it have the opposite effect?
Well, if it had been done before the elections or even right after the elections, you know, it would have been a rallying cry, oh, we have to defend ourselves against Israel. But if the Israelis wait for the dust to settle, which I totally think they were doing, they wanted to see, you know, what's going to happen with this election and how things are going to pan out. But the truth is, you know, in a couple of weeks, you know, I think, you know, the die will, you know, could well be cast. And
you raised another issue before. I only have a minute in the rest of this hour, that Israel doesn't have the bunker busting bombs. You're saying they could get them from the U.S. if they had an ally in Obama. Isn't that what you're implying?
They've asked for them in the United States, and Obama said no. So what they have is bombs that can't go very deep. They also have cruise missiles, but cruise missiles have very small warheads. They also can't go very deep. So if they wanted bunker-busting bombs, they'd have to get them from us.
But why does Obama not provide them with bunker-busting bombs to take out the Iranian nuclear threat once and for all?
You kind of scratch your head, because if the Israelis are going to do this, wouldn't you want them to do it right? And what are you going to say? Oh, well, everybody will know if we give them the bombs, everybody is going to know they came from us and we were complicit. But you know what? When Israel strikes Iran, guess what the Iranians are going to say? The U.S. is behind it. So what difference does it make? You know, it's just like Obama saying, well, we don't want to interfere.
Are we going to wait for Hitler to invade Poland, Czechoslovakia, and the Soviet Union before we wake up to what's going on? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're the military historian. Dr. James Carafano, PhD, thank you so much for enlightening the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's a blue Monday for the world, it's a blue Monday for democracy, and it's a blue Monday for the Obama White House. And if you look at the polls, we know that they're not reliable, but of course we rely upon them when they give us what we want. So we'll rely upon the Rasmussen poll, because they say that Obama's poll numbers have gone negative with regard to positives and negatives for the first time. And I believe that's because the people see the true weakness of this administration with regard to Iran and North Korea. There's no question in my mind that those are big issues, as well as the man's madness with regard to spending money he does not have. Yes, he inherited a $1 trillion deficit from George Bush, the fiscal socialist, but he is now recommending that we expand the $1 trillion deficit into a $3 trillion deficit, and even the Democrats are balking at this. So his poll numbers are collapsing. However, there are other stories out there. In the last hour, we talked about Iran and North Korea, the inaction in Darfur after much sound and fury during the campaign and such on the Savage Nation. And you want to continue talking about it, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'd like to also say that looking at what's going on in Iran with ballot stuffing, more ballots in a box in a neighborhood than there are voters, it could be that the reason Obama is not mentioning the unfair election in Iran is because Acorn may have been sent over to Iran to run the election for Ahmadinejad. Of course, I say that tongue-in-cheek, but the results in Iran seem to me very close to the results in America. Here we have an unknown junior senator who wins by a large margin, and of course, there are allegations of voter fraud, voter intimidation, Acorn workers, Black Panthers with clubs, and what? Nobody says a word here in America. Where were the protests in America? At least in Iran, they have the guts to go out in the street and demand a recount. Here we went home and went back and watched sports or turned on Fox News, which leads me to the fix was in before the election was over. I was shocked over the weekend to see that John McCain has actually shown himself to be the fraud and shame that he actually is when he said that Barack Obama has done very well in his first 5 months in the White House. If you ever doubted me when I said to you that McCain was set up to fall by the Republican Party because the game is played in a certain way in America, here's how it's played. 8 years Democrat, 8 years Republican, then 8 years Democrat. McCain was used as a fall guy. The Republicans had raped the Treasury sufficient that they wanted to throw the ball to the other court, so now the Democrats can rape the Treasury for another 8 years with the borrow and spend policies. Or now it's going to be borrow and tax and spend. Under Bush, it was borrow and spend. And under Obama, it's going to be borrow and tax and spend. But there's certainly no fiscal responsibility in either party because they're all basically running it as a Ponzi scheme. Now, how do I say that? How do I know I'm right? Well, I can't prove I'm right. But look at McCain coming out over the weekend and saying, Barack Obama has done well in his first 5 months in the White House. McCain, you know something? I've said this before. I had mixed feelings about you all along. I long felt that you had served your country so nobly that no one should ever criticize you. But, you know, we're way past Vietnam. And the fact of the matter is, for you to be this clear and total quisling that you are is a danger to the United States of America. For you to act as though you are a conservative in any way, shape, or form is a disgrace because no one believes you except liberals. I believe that Senator John McCain should do the honorable thing and follow the path of that other sterling rhino from Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter, and simply shift parties and become the liberal Democrat that he's always been. If John McCain had any truth to him that was any truth left in him, he would cease pretending to be a conservative Republican and he would simply join the Democrat ticket because that's where he belongs. And that's my monologue, and I approve of it. Now, what would you like to talk about? What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to go to michaelsavage.com and see what has been posted today. Many of the stories I pick over the weekend, some the webmaster picks, and I'm going to look at them, okay? On the top left, we have another superb article by Professor Ellis Washington entitled, We Glorify the Hitler of Iran, Yet We Hate Michael Savage? Question mark. And he sent me some emails. This gentleman, who I don't know, but I'm going to get to know very well, in fact, if I could find his emails, he wrote to England. He wrote to the shadow government in England, and he asked them to intervene on my behalf to get my name off the banned list. And they some of them said that they, here it is. Here it is. Dr. Washington sent letters over to them, and he got some answers from them. And he reminded them that he, too, like Obama, went to Harvard. He, too, like Obama, has a law degree. He too, like Obama, is an African-American. And he said, yet as a conservative, nobody hears a word he has to say, and nobody in the conservative media will listen to Ellis Washington in his defense of Michael Savage. Thank you, Professor Washington. When you're floating on an ice floe, any friendly voice is nice to hear. McCain says Obama has done well. Next, we see Al-Qaeda says it would use Pakistani nuclear weapons. On the right, we see from the London Guardian, Goldman Sachs to make record bonus payout. You hear this? Despite the fact that they melted America down, despite the fact that Goldman Sachs staff as far as I can tell, is a criminal enterprise. Despite the fact that Goldman Sachs has been running America for at least the three administrations, despite the fact that Obama pretends that he's independent, he's a stooge and a puppet of Goldman and Sachs, by the way. But you can't figure that out because you're listening to the schmucks who speak on behalf of the great one. Goldman Sachs is going to make record bonus payouts? How could this be going on while they're supposedly cracking down on Wall Street? Answer, they're not cracking down on Wall Street. They're cracking down on Main Street. They're closing Chrysler dealerships. They've sacked General Motors. They're going to tax you to death in order to make sure that the thieves on Wall Street continue to stuff their fat jowls with the fat of the land. I think that's enough for right now. Truthfully, I can't read anymore because I don't want to have another incident like I did last week. I really don't. I don't want to have another one. I had enough last week, and enough is enough. Go to michaelsavage.com if you're interested in the articles. Otherwise, sayonara, Samson. 1-800-449-8255 is the Savage Nation. Actually, I would like to talk about life rafts for a minute, because yesterday I was out on my boat. It was a very nice – let me talk about Father's Day for a minute, if you don't mind, because many of you – understand that Father's Day has been attacked by the feminists and the other forces in America who hate males. And Father's Day to me is something that I pay very little attention to most of my life. I'm kind of an iconoclastic guy. I don't pay attention to holidays, religious holidays, secular holidays, more or less. All right, I respect them for those who respect them, but I don't pay much attention to them, and maybe to my own detriment, because people need ritual. Well, guess what? As I've gotten older, I like Father's Day, and I like Mother's Day. I think mothers and fathers should be honored, and I don't think fathers and mothers are honored enough, to be very honest with you. And as a father of two adult children, I had a great time being with, you know, family on Father's Day. It made, like, my life have meaning, to be honest with you, in a way that you can't get from friends. It's not that there's anything wrong with friends, but Father's Day has a special meaning. So I went out on the boat, and when we were out there, It was a little choppy north of when we went out past Point Bonita, Bonnet Point. If you look it up on a chart, you go out through the Golden Gate, which is still amazing. Even my dog Teddy looks up as we go under the Golden Gate Bridge because he realizes it's one of the Earth's iconic architectural masterpieces. Dogs are not stupid. He looks up and he sees this incredible orange structure, and it's like, what? Wow, man, who built that? Who built that, Dad? You know, well, they did it without computers in 2 years using slide rules before they had to put certain hiring practices in America, which now would have taken 400 years with a million lawsuits, and they couldn't build a bridge. They'd still be talking about how to lay the pilings if they try to build the Golden Gate Bridge today. I told my dog silently as we went under the bridge, but he understood it in the blink of an eye. But as we got out past Point Bonita and you turn right and it's choppy, it was a lot of fun. The boat handles well. It's a it's a trawler. Like boat that'll do up to 18 knots. It's an interesting boat. Again, it's built in 2002, and I like it more and more each year. Every year they say sell it, and every year I consider selling it, and every year I put a coat of polish on it and have the guy varnish it and keep it and say, you know what, it's better than any new boat I've looked at. I'm not selling it. Why do you have to sell something when it's good? Aren't there classic cars, I say to myself? Yes. Well, there must be classic boats, so keep it. The engines have started every time I try to start them for 7 years now. So anyway, I'm not selling it. So we go out solid as a rock, like a railroad train. You can turn this thing around in a whacking following sea, and she'll turn like a railroad car without stabilizers, okay? It's only 42 feet long. But anyway, I have a life raft on the boat, and it's one of these, the eight-man life rafts, a canister kind of thing, that if the boat gets in trouble, what you do is you throw this canister overboard, and the life raft is released. And you're supposed to step down into the life raft. It has a roof on it, water, food, EPIRBs. Makes you want to camp out in the summer. I hope I never have to use it. But what I didn't know is this. There's a little thing attached to it called a painter line that plays out when you throw the raft overboard. In other words, if you threw it overboard without a line attached to the boat, it would float away, right? So naturally, there's a line goes inside the canister that is attached to the boat. So that the boat, the rafts, you know, goes out and deploys and the canopy comes up. And then you pull it towards the boat, assuming the boat hasn't gone down. Let's say just the engines fail or there's a, God forbid, a fire. And it's a slow fire, but you know you got to get off the thing. So you pull the raft towards you. But what I didn't know is how do you break the line between the boat and the raft, in other words, if that happens. I've never been in that kind of situation. So apparently there's a knife raft, which is located in a pouch on the upper tube just above the inflation cylinder. And what you do is once you're bored, you take out the knife and you cut the line, and then you pray to God the Coast Guard does their job instead of just harassing boaters on Sunday. Did I tell you about the Coast Guard? I'm not a fan of the U.S. Coast Guard, by the way. I know you think I'm supposed to be. I'm not a big fan of thugs with 40 caliber guns who like to board boats to look at the girls and scare dogs, incidentally. I'll tell you more about that on the Savage Nation when I return. Savage. I'm going to talk about Father's Day to eat my heart out about Iran, North Korea. Well, what am I going to do about it? We got an administration filled with college professors who don't know what they're doing. They're inventing it as they go along, making it up, and then coming out, dusting off a speech like they know that they're in charge. They don't know what they're doing. They're out of control. They're trying all the college pranks that they talk to each other about, and here they are running the world, and they don't know what to do from one minute to the next, like chickens without heads. North Korea, they send a ship to trail it with a hail and query. Yeah? Hail and query. Hello? Are you carrying a weapon? You are? Oh, sorry to ask you. We'll leave you alone now. Have a nice trip. And Iran, he doesn't even give the moral support to the protesters. Forget that both of the guys are the same at the end of the day. One wears a suit that fits a little better than the Turkish guy, who looks like he got the suit from an old Barney store in Fiji that was left over and sent back to Iran through back channels, and he can't even buy a suit. He runs Iran. He can't buy a decent suit. The Iranian, the Persian people are sophisticated people. They dress nicer than anyone I ever met. This guy wears a suit that he looks like he got from Robert Hall, that was left over on a cargo ship somewhere and landed on a beach in on the shores of Tripoli, that he bought in a bargain from Gaddafi in a missile trade. Why does he dress so badly, that maniac we were talking about? That's why I don't want to do it anymore. It's enough already politics. So after the boat ride, at night I went to dinner. I want to tell you about dinner for a minute. I've been getting poisoned. Chinese and Japanese, it's over. I can't do it anymore. Not all, but it's enough already. I got a sushi last week. I told you, in a place in Mill Valley, I won't mention it, right off the highway with a blue roof, a Japanese place off the highway in Mill Valley near the Ferrari dealership. I won't mention it at all. They have a lunch special. I didn't have the time to ask. Give me the lunch special. It took forever to get. And I gobbled down two of the sushi. I felt sick. And I looked on the way down. It was eel that on my body. Not food poisoning, where you'd call a doctor, but it was in there. Like, who would eat eel? Why are they eating an eel? That you ate after the occupation when there was no food. Who would eat an eel? You know, I never heard of a Jew getting sick from eating a matzo ball when you think about it. All right, so they're salty. But you don't want them with food poisoning from a matzo ball. Maybe there's something to be said for the kosher food laws. I mean, maybe just follow them for a while and stop eating eel and other slimy, disgusting creatures that crawl in the mud of the bay, you know. I said to myself, so I gave up. I'm eating only European food now. So I go to an old friend's place last night. I said, that's it. I'm not going anymore. No Asia, no more. I can't take it. Either my skin itches from the spices, which they use to cover up the tainted seafood they're selling you. That's it. I'm finding you. They're all cutting back on the quality and the amount. You ask anybody. See if I'm making it up. But the smiles are still there, you know, with the bows, the white liberals bowing when they give them a glass of water or a napkin. Everyone bowing and their hands from Kenfield. They put their hands in front of their bow. They don't know what they're doing. The Asians look at them like they're insane. They're not in Tibet. Every liberal in Maroon, they go to an Asian restaurant, they bow and put their hands together when they give them a glass of water. You know what I'm saying? They don't do that in China and Japan. They do that maybe in Tibet in a movie, you know, the sound of a... Forget the movie that I think they did. The King and I. Maybe The King and I. The liberals are like stuck on The King and I. That's how you behave to Asians? You bow and put your hands together because they gave you a napkin? So I went to a friend's restaurant. He's Basque and a real Basque as opposed to like fake Buddhists and real Buddhists. Fake Basques and real Basques. He's a real Basque guy. Wonderful man. I know him for 20 years. And it has special meaning to me, the restaurant. But I ate there. The main thing is the food is good. But I can't tell you where it is because he lets me bring Teddy in the restaurant. And he gets a chair, and I order him a hamburger without salt and pepper. And he eats. Actually, he has better manners than most liberal children. A, he doesn't bark. B, he doesn't run around the restaurant with Crayolas. C, the father doesn't ask him questions to show how smart he is. And D, he eats nicely and then just looks at you and take him out. He's a better table mate, trust me, than most of the liberal children in Marin on Ritalin. So that's the second reason I go there. And the hamburger is quite good. The reason I order the hamburger for the dog, there's actually a devious reason, is because till the food comes, it's 30 minutes because it's real food. The hamburger comes in 10 minutes, and I eat half of the dog's hamburger before the basket food arrives.
Savage.
Why bother hanging out with celebrities when I can spend time with the people who made me one? I know where my bread is buttered. Mika Brzezinski is here, I believe, in the house. Mika and I have a lot in common. We both have partners named Joe, who used to be in Congress. Don't know when to stop talking.
And neither do you. Now, that's the President of the United States still thinking he's a TV host. All the while, North Korea is threatening us with nuclear war, and the Iranians are dying in the streets. But those were the schmucks who put him in power, the vermin in the media, who I detest with everything in me. Now, you say, why should you have such vitriol for such nice men and women in the media? Because it is those Bolsheviks in the media who gave us Obama. That is why. Now, you say, well, that's their right. It actually isn't their right. The media is supposed to be a watchdog, not lapdogs. And when guys like Brian Williams and these others on the television tube become nothing but lapdogs, who is left to stand guard for you, the people? It falls to the few correspondents who are willing to stand up to the lies and the few commentators, both in the written and in the spoken media, who are willing to stand up to the lies and speak truth to power. It certainly is not the vermin in the audience laughing at these horrendous jokes written by a 10th-rate comedian. Let me tell you, in my opinion. Play clip 39.
In fact, the show has been such a hit that all of you guys now want to come and tape one in my house. ABC is planning a series called Dancing with the Czars. Oh, TLC's got something called John and Kate plus Peter Orze.
I don't get it.
That's going to be good.
You get this?
Nick at Night has a new take on an old classic. Leave it to Uyghurs.
What is that? I turn it off. It's nauseating. I actually think Obama's not that smart. I think he's a clever manipulator who used every game in town to get into law school, to get through law school, to become a senator, and then to become president. And there's some very, very powerful forces of people behind him who you don't even know. Okay? And they have to do with manipulating currencies. One of them, I believe, almost broke the Bank of England and almost broke the Bank of Malaysia. And I believe he's the one trying to destroy the U.S. currency. And I believe if we had an FBI, that man would be hauled in for questioning. And I believe if we had an FBI, it would not be Michael Savage Band in England, but it would be the man who created Media Matters. What's interesting to me about the man who created Media Matters is that he allegedly fled Nazi Hungary, and now he has come here to the United States of America after being a billionaire several times over, and he spends all of his money trying to create a fascist dictatorship. The exact Stalinist state that he allegedly ran from, he has created in the form of these media sneaks who sit with little tapes on their ears trying to bring down any opposition to this growing communist threat in the United States of America. But I'll have more on that when the time is right. Today is not the right time for it. San Francisco, KNEW, Sean, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Descent, I salute you for the work you're doing once again. The reason I called is that I believe that this is a situation that Mr. Obama is standing back because one day in this country, when the people are fed up, they're going to do the same thing just like they did with the Tea Party, and that's when he's going to bring that rabbit out of his hat, which is the personal militia that he's been talking about.
Fear that he will do exactly that. He'll create his own Revolutionary Guard. That's exactly what he said during the campaign and exactly what was covered up by the vermin in the media who were laughing at his tepid jokes at the radio and TV correspondents' dinner on Friday night. They are the people who are going to bring tyranny to America. It's not Obama. He can't do it alone. It's the vermin in the media who are enabling him.
That is absolutely correct, sir, and I believe that this is a global communist movement, and he's a stealth agent. And he has
well, many people fear that. I'm not going to cut you off and say I would rule that out. There are just too many questions about him for me to say that's 100% crazy or a conspiracy theorist who has no place in speaking in America. I've read this. I see this. It's growing, and people doubt this man's loyalty to America. Thank you for the call. That's all. And I wanted to talk about restaurants for a minute. But all right. It's the summer. You don't want to do it. I thought it was cute talking about the dog and the hamburger and the food. What I do is I get the good meal, and then on the side I ask for a basket of French fries, which is not, they're not even on the menu. And the waitress says to me, okay, I'll get them for you, even though we don't have them, because she knows I like them. All right, so it's a big indulgence. What are you going to do? That's all. What else do you want to talk about? Eating well is the best revenge. They say living well is the best revenge. To me, eating is part of living. Probably one of the better parts of living, in addition to you-know-what, which I don't want to talk about. It's too obvious. And I mean bicycle riding. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. Where's the call I want to take now? North Carolina, Melanie, a woman. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Hi. I wanted to see what your thoughts are on women in the getting close to 40 going back to school. I know there's a...
I think people should go back to school at any age. Certainly beats staying at home and watching television.
Well,
or staying at home and listening to talk radio, doesn't it?
I listen to it on my way home.
Just think of this. Look at it this way. If you were to take the 3 hours a day that you spend listening to my show over the next 6 years, you could have a degree.
Yeah, you're right.
All right. Thanks for the call. Absolutely, I'm a believer in education. There are pitfalls, which is the liberal indoctrination, the brainwashing. You'll have to just, you know, ignore it. That's all. You'll have to let these little despots get away with murder in browbeating you with their lies about America and their lies about family. That's all. And just learn. That's why I'm a believer in you should go into something fundamentally real, like a hard science if you can, because I think there's less doctrinaire garbage in the hard sciences. Although I know communism, the communist socialist message has penetrated so far into this American educational establishment that we're going to have almost the equivalent of another Lysenko affair very soon, if we haven't already had one, and I don't want to go into it. I will go into it. Does anyone know what the Lysenko affair is? That's a very obscure point that I throw out for a real reason. It's not to sound intelligent. During the heyday of Stalin's Russia, his scientists had to be politically conforming to the Stalinist ideal of a communist state. We have almost the equivalent today in the United States of America in academia, for sure, in the social sciences. Almost to the last person in the social sciences is a very good German, so to speak. With regard to the hard sciences, I don't think it's only but a matter of time until a Lysenko affair occurs in this country, where a scientist starts to prove things that are disprovable or objectively false in order to support the rubbish that Obama is feeding the public. I suppose you could find it already with the healthcare debate, where they're telling you that the single payer program is actually cost effective. Then you get one of the crackpot so-called social scientists coming up with graphs and charts telling you it's true. It's all a lie. It's pure Cuban style socialism. But you don't want to talk about dogs and hamburgers. What can I do? Here's a guy calling Who is Savage's favorite president. If you only changed it to Who is Savage's favorite restaurants, I would be willing to talk about it. I don't have a favorite president in Los Angeles on KGIL. I don't know how to answer a question like that, because each president is a product of his time and of the people. That's the president can't be judged necessarily. What would that president do today? You know, because I think that if George Washington lived today, I'd be almost like John McCain, a quisling and a sellout. I know it's hard to believe. I mean, when you think about it, they're Machiavellian. They don't care about the country, these guys. They care about their careers. And that's the product of a system that's evolved to this point. And, you know, and the people themselves are not capable of understanding a difference by and large. So how about the women and the Iranian protests? How many years have I told you it's going to be the women in Muslim countries that are going to have to stand up to the mullahs? It is the women who are the most oppressed in Muslim lands. And you would have thought that the great Obama, the great liberator, would have said one word for women's rights when he just did the Hate America tour, when he got on his hands and knees and kissed the ring of the Saudi king and went to Turkey and bowed down in a mosque. Why didn't he say something about the oppression of women in any of these countries? Because women have been harassed and humiliated by these religious throwbacks for 30 years, ever since Jimmy Carter brought them back to power. David in New York on WOR, why do you call the Savage Nation? Go ahead, please.
Hey, yeah, I was just calling to make a comment on the story you were telling about taking the dog to the restaurant. I listen to your show quite a bit. I don't see eye to eye with you politically at all, but I love listening to your show. I think you're great. And just that image of the dog sitting at the table enjoying its own meal next to you at the table was just...
Well, he was with the family. How can I leave a member of the family at home?
Exactly.
He's a service animal. He makes me happy. Isn't that a service animal?
Absolutely.
Right. I'm able to digest better. Look, if he was an ill-behaved liberal dog, I wouldn't even think about it. If he was a barker or a peer or a snapper or a biter, I wouldn't even bring him in there. But he grew up in this restaurant. He actually grew up on French wine and good food when he was a puppy. So he knows good food when he's around it. His favorite wine is French red wine because he grew up on it. But I don't give him wine. I mean, when you say give him wine, I don't give him alcohol. Once in a blue moon, I'll put a finger, a tip of a finger in a wine to see what he thinks of it, because he can be a good wine tester. But lately, I don't give him any of that. But he does eat a burger. Don't you think my strategy is good, that if the food takes a while to make because it's good food that takes a while to prepare, that you order the dog a good hamburger and you eat half of it till it comes? And what's wrong with that idea?
Nothing at all. I think
that's all. But isn't it cute, the idea of him sitting in a chair, politely leaning over in a dish?
Yeah,
I will say it's a dog plate that we bring because we don't want to violate any health codes.
Right.
I love one snotty woman walked out with her head in the air, well, bringing a dog in a restaurant. I had a few choice words for her, which I kept to myself. One thing about the Europeans is dogs are in restaurants there. They know certain things more than we do. But the Europeans are better behaved than Americans. That's the difference. Americans are rather primitive when it comes to restaurant behavior to begin with. You just have to listen to the sound level in the average San Francisco restaurant to know how juvenile and out of control they are. The screaming. Why do they scream when they eat? You don't hear that in a European restaurant. People go to dine in a restaurant, unless they're minors eating in some cafeteria somewhere. Here, every restaurant sounds like minors during a whistle break. Oh, they're sophisticated. They're spending $50 a head, so they figure they have to yell. Three glasses of bad wine, and they're off and running at the races, you know. So that's why their dogs are better behaved. The dogs aren't hysterical. You go in a European restaurant, you see a beautiful poodle, for example, sitting in a chair, eating politely. Better behaved than most liberals in San Francisco in terms of their behavior. That's why I'd rather, you know. Ah, one more caller. You know, it's only Monday of the week already. You want me to burn out by Wednesday? I'll have another EKG job. I'm not going in for it again. Once was enough. I'm not going to get excited. I'm not going to die for your sins. Let me put it to you that way. Let me put it to you very bluntly. I am not going to die for your sins. I am not going to martyr myself anymore for this show. I'll do the show. But I can see with this affair in the United Kingdom, other than the people who sent money to support my legal fund, and I want to thank every one of you. I wish I could thank you individually. I can't. Other than those people, I found that I have no friends. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers immediately post-haste. San Diego, Doug, you're up on the air. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I've listened to you for quite a few years, and I've heard you speak about quite a few different subjects. But interestingly, I've never heard you speak about UFOs or what your thoughts are on them.
And I really take a call on this issue, but, the answer is Obama's an alien. He's from Jupiter. I'm convinced he's from Jupiter. He's come on a spaceship.
That much
I don't know, Doug. This is a topic that I have absolutely no answer for. I've seen a couple of shows in passing about the lights, and they landed and they snatch people away and they come back like the body snatches. How do I know? I mean, I'm basically an intuitive guy. I'm fairly well educated, but where's the evidence that there's a UFO?
You usually have an opinion on everything, so I would guess you have.
My opinion is I have no opinion on this.
All right, that's fair.
What do you think? You think that they're real?
I think it's hard to believe that everybody has been lying about seeing.
Yes, okay, I'd agree with you. Let's talk about it from a logical point of view. I'm at the same point. I mean, you got police chiefs, airline captains. They see the lights and the things fly near them and they zip away. I understand that they could be. Why should I assume on a logical basis that there's no other intelligent life in the universe? I don't make that assumption.
I guess the other thing would be is if you, I would wonder why they wouldn't land in the middle of Central Park to if they wanted to land on our planet, just as we would go to a site where we thought there was intelligent life, or maybe they don't think it's too intelligent in New York, but that's what I think. It's always kind of obscure where they're sighted. It's never...
Well, we have to first ask ourselves one question. Is there a possibility that there are UFOs and intelligent life? The answer is yes. Logically, there would have to be a possibility. Number two, are they friendly or are they hostile? Are they more like Kim Jong-il or like Gordon Brown? I could have put it in the context. Are they friend or foe? We don't know. And then the third question is, when are they going to finally land and do something already that's good if they're friendly? When are they going to straighten it all out?
Yeah, well, maybe sometime while Obama's president, they'll feel the need to.
Maybe they'll land on the White House lawn and say, it's all a fraud. He's an illegal alien, you idiots. He has no citizenship. He's a faker. San Francisco. Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I love the talk. To talk about dogs and going into restaurants, because I used to bring my big, massive, he was a fox red, yellow Labrador, and actually, we talked to you on the street a couple of times back when he was alive. He was huge. He looked like a Great Dane crossed with a Chihuahua.
Where did you, what restaurant did you bring him in?
I used to take him into Grumpy's.
Oh. Well, my friend Miles used to bring his Irish wolfhounds to his bar, and they both, I haven't been there in years. My drinking days are over, haha. I just haven't been up in that area for a while. But the fact is that he had wolfhounds. They die at 6 years old, 5 years old. You know that.
That's horrible.
Probably from the beer. Well, it's either from the... you know what? I think it's a myth. They say Irish wolfhounds die young at six. Oh, it's the genes. I said, no, it's probably from the bar food. Now, that's an original joke that David Letterman could never tell because he doesn't have the wit to create such a joke as I did right on the spot. It's not dirty. It doesn't attack Sarah Palin, and it doesn't talk about raping 14-year-olds, but it certainly gets laughs, doesn't it? It's not a bad joke, actually. Let's see who steals it first. No, it's sad. That's why I don't buy big dogs. I've come to understand little dogs last longer. 21, 22, walkers, artificial feet. They're going to be like an invalid marching around. You have to take care of a lot of. They last 16, 17 is the norm for a lot of the little guys. The big ones, because of the inbreeding, and it's the heart, and they have to pump and running, and there's no wolves anymore. It's laying around in sawdust and in a bad drop, French fries. I don't know why they. Why do they die so young? Why do big dogs die younger than little dogs? I don't even know logically. Do little guys, men last longer than big guys? It's actually probably an interesting question. All the big guys who were captains of the football team, you should see them at 40, 50, living wrecks. It's the nerds. They start to come into third gear in their 40s and 50s. Oh, Lord. No, it's very controversial bringing animals in restaurants. I totally oppose it. Other than my dog, I absolutely am opposed to animals in restaurants. No, they're disgusting. I don't like listening to looking at a dog drooling at a table any more than I like seeing a liberal changing a diaper on a table. I told you I had friends like that. She used to pose nude in a models' guild where she had a body that she didn't want to look at. The only reason she poses the models' guild is because she can make men look at her. They're the ones who had a baby. They used it to disgust people in restaurants. They would change his diaper on the table in order to make people see the diaper. I'm telling you. Then they're, God. And then they vote for Obama in order to, and again, insult people with the same bodily product. 1-800-449-8255, another big hour here on the Savage Nation. This has been the Monday edition thus far of the Savage Nation. With God's will, and your listenership, there shall be a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday ad infinitum editions.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's what's on michaelsavage.com, over 1.2 million unique visitors each month. The lead article is from Professor Ellis Washington. It is entitled, "We Glorify Iran's Hitler and Hate Michael Savage?" Question mark. Yes, that's right. He says, "For the irrational person who still holds out any hope for an independent press dedicated to reporting the truth, one has only to consider the 24/7 servile press of the presidential elections in Iran. The coverage by the government-controlled media here in America of Iranian politics demonstrates to me that liberals really do have a love affair for fascist dictators." Professor Washington goes on and says, "Yet radio host Michael Savage, an authentic American patriot and conservative intellectual with a PhD in the heart sciences from the University of California at Berkeley, is ignored. A modern-day Prometheus, who alone has been waging a protracted war with England since May 5 to clear his name, is vilified when unjustly blacklisted by America's closest allies." He says, "We glorify the Hitler of Iran, yet we hate Michael Savage." He goes on, "While millions of Iranians daily risk death by riding in the streets of Tehran over the election farce that elevated Ahmadinejad to a second term, the government-controlled media here in America, even Fox News, are sycophantic in their obsequious coverage of the Iranian election, despite glaring examples of voter disenfranchisement and now a bloody mounting death toll." That's Ellis Washington, not to be missed. And by the way, Ellis Washington wrote me, and I'm not going to read the entire chain of emails, because this is not on my website. This is behind the scenes. Professor Washington wrote me and said, "Michael, I believe that one day my day will come, as will yours. I believe that it was God's destiny for us to meet. Thomas Paine once said, reason obeys itself. Ignorance follows what is dictated to it. As long as you and I cling to veritas and reason, nothing will be able to stop our cause." And he says that he wrote to the powers that be in England to try to get them to intervene on my behalf. And he says, "I am a black man, a professor of law and politics at Savannah State University, as well as a commentator for the WorldNet Daily. Although I have been a conservative intellectual for 20 years and even attended Harvard Law School with President Barack Obama, to this day, I cannot get one conservative politician or media entity here in America to help me, to help our waning conservative movement here, or to take up Dr. Savage's fight for freedom of speech. And this includes his fellow conservative radio presenters such as Limbaugh and Hannity." And he says, "To my fellow conservatives of the shadow parliament, please give Dr. Michael Savage, Prometheus in England, a voice of liberty and freedom for those transcendent values that are reckoned dead here in America. Peace, Ellis Washington, J.D., United States of America." Ah, but moving on. It's time for something lighter. Joining us now is James Herson with his report on what's going on in Hollywood.
Thanks, Michael. PETA's been in the news, and they took a swat at Obama. During an interview with CNBC, President Obama killed a fly that was buzzing around the set. So PETA condemned Obama for the senseless murder of an innocent insect. Supposedly, the leader of the free world was quoted saying, "I got the sucker." What PETA said is that Obama isn't the Buddha. He's a human being, and human beings have a long way to go before they think, before they act. I guess PETA doesn't agree with Newsweek editor Evan Thomas that Obama is sort of like God.
Unbelievable.
And after a pile of media coverage resulted, PETA had to respond to all the media coverage. Here's what they said. It's the media who are making a big deal about the fly swat, not PETA. However, we took the opportunity, when asked, to point out that we offer lots of ways in which to control insects of all kinds without harming them. Now, while the media has been busy covering the fly story, a disturbing pattern is emerging where public watchdogs are being fired for doing too much investigating. Within a week, two inspectors general have been summarily dismissed, one by the Obama White House and the other by the International Trade Commission. Senator Grassley, the ranking Republican on the Senate Finance Committee, is looking into these abrupt Donald Trump-style terminations. Now, both were investigating subjects involving the Obama administration at the time they were fired. Is there a pattern emerging? Is there a pattern that undermines the independence of government watchdogs? You know, those who are supposed to look out for waste, fraud, and abuse? Gerald Wolpin, fired illegally, was looking into Obama crony, Kevin Johnson, former NBA player, now the mayor of Sacramento. Wolpin appears to have become an obstacle to the use of AmeriCorps to provide taxpayer money and engage in so-called community organizing, you know, the kind that helped Obama win the last election. Inspector General Wolpin gave a report to Congress that had implicated Mayor Johnson. It could be that Wolpin had to be removed, and he's been slandered as well. Wolpin was fired illegally under a law that Obama had promoted as a senator. According to the Inspector General Reform Act of 2008, co-sponsored by then-Senator Obama, inspectors general must be given 30 days' notice of their dismissal. Another fired inspector general was Judith Gwynne, who was jettisoned from the International Trade Commission, where she was watching the Obama administration's efforts in creating multilateral trade treaties, the kind that profoundly affect our economy and our sovereignty. When inspector generals are suddenly fired while investigating issues that could be detrimental to the administration, what time is it? Well, the answer is, it's grand jury time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that will happen the very same day the pigs are flying through the frigid air of Hades. Now, Michael, I'm from Chicago, where those that we call existentially challenged people vote. That's why I'm applauding a Philippines member of the legislature who's promoting a bill that would require the civil registrar there and the Electoral Commission to be notified when a registered voter is dead. Imagine that, notifying authorities when a voter is dead. Like the U.S., the Philippines have had problems with voter fraud. In previous elections, deceased folks apparently turned up and voted. Our Congress is too busy creating the heftiest debt in the history of human existence to bother with a trivial matter that underpins our representative democracy, like the integrity of the vote. Just too busy.
It's insane.
Hillary Clinton has been busy, too. The Secretary of State has been denigrating America and apologizing to vicious dictators. Reportedly, Hillary has had some sort of accident. She fractured her elbow. But there's no truth to the rumor that Bill Clinton has been treated for bruised ribs. Well, all of us who care enough to take a stand for freedom have sore ribs these days. Thanks, Michael, for putting up with it.
Hey, thanks for the report, James. This is the Savage Nation. Savage.
Last thing that I want to do is to have the United States be a foil for those forces inside Iran who would love nothing better than to make this an argument about the United States. What we can do is bear witness and say to the world that the incredible demonstrations that we've seen is a testimony to, I think, what Dr. King called the arc of the moral universe. It's long, but it bends towards justice.
What's interesting to me is that isolationism as a foreign policy is actually an old American idea, and it goes back to George Washington, who said in his farewell address that in regards to Europe, quote, "It must be unwise in us to implicate ourselves by artificial ties in the ordinary vicissitudes of our politics," blah, blah, blah. Basically, he was saying that we should avoid involvement in foreign affairs. Thomas Jefferson, the second president of the U.S., said in his inaugural address that the United States should have, quote, "peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all nations, entangling alliances with none." And many of you actually still believe in that. The problem is that there were two edges, actually two parts to isolationism, which are fundamentally a conservative ideas. One was avoid entangling alliances, which you could say, well, therefore, let the Iranians do what they have to do. Let's pause right there for a minute. But the other side of isolationism is the idea of protectionism, which states that there should be barriers to trade and immigration. You'll notice that Obama is a conservative when it comes to isolationism, meaning hands off on Iran, hands off on Sudan, hands off on North Korea, hands off on China. But he continues to permit foreign companies to ruin our country with unadulterated junk products without trade barriers. And more importantly, he permits illegal aliens to flood into America. So you can't have it both ways unless you're Barack Hussein Obama and you owe the media. Own the media, excuse me. Or shall I say owe the media? Yeah, I actually was right. So let's look at the big picture. Iran, China, Darfur, Iran. Iran, China, Darfur, North Korea. So far, Obama has a zero on all of those. And many of you are applauding it, like the chickadee who got up and said that that's exactly the right thing. It would be arrogant for the United States to interfere in any manner. Well, we're not asking for military intervention in Iran. We are asking for moral intervention. Apparently, Obama has no morality to offer because he would have offered it already. But let's go to the bigger picture. Let's listen to the chickadee again, who appeared today on CNN saying that it would be arrogant to say a word in clip 5, and then we're going to analyze it on the Savage Nation.
Contrary to what Rich says and McCain and all of the other Republicans who want us to interfere, you know, this is not about the United States. And I think everybody who talks about that we should be doing more, again, that just goes to the arrogance that has gotten us in trouble in the past.
Now, that's a Twitterer who belongs teaching junior studies somewhere at a junior college somewhere on a reservation in Guam, I would think. How in the world this idiot could wind up speaking for the Obama administration is quite worrisome, but that's a secondary issue. Let's take the chickadee at her words. She says Iran is not our problem, and it would be interventionism and meddling in order to say anything. Now, let's spin the clock back to 1939. By the same token, people were being rounded up in Nazi Germany. Yes, we're going to go back to that, boys and girls. And they would be being put into death camps, Jews, mainly Jews, and the gypsies, and the socialists, and the trade unionists, and any Catholic priest who stood up to Hitler. They were being put into concentration camps, worked to death, and then gassed. And you could say, well, it wasn't our business. You could argue it wasn't our business. But then again, it was our business. It was our business because by taking on Hitler at that time, luckily for us, the moron Hitler, the maniac, the narcissistic egomaniac Hitler, made the mistake of thinking he could fight two wars at once, and he invaded the Soviet Union. The fact is that because we meddled, because the United States under FDR intervened, Hitler was defeated. Had he not been defeated, you'd be speaking German or you'd be a lampshade. Here's what we've been talking about today. Barack Obama's limp-wristed response to Iranian protesters in the streets. Barack Obama and all of his cronies have a wait-and-see approach in Iran. Well, I would call it isolationist. What are they waiting for? We're not asking for military intervention. We're asking for moral intervention. Now, what about Obama's limp response to North Korea? Here's North Korea actively threatening the American homeland by saying they will attack Hawaii. They have a ship sailing at this very moment that our Obama-run pansy military has stated they will only hail and query. Why is the United States using such weak responses to North Korea? What has happened to our military? And what is Obama doing in the time of crisis? Well, he's been joking with all of his media friends and the TV and radio correspondents at their dinner. I'll make that old but still true illusion. Nero fiddling while Rome is burning. Play the clip.
Why bother hanging out with celebrities when I can spend time with the people who made me one? I know where my bread is buttered. Mika Brzezinski is here, I believe, in the house. Mika and I have a lot in common. We both have partners named Joe who used to be in Congress and don't know when to stop talking.
So before I get back to politics, I do have to get this out of my system a little bit more about the dogs, only because this is such a personal show. I know I have many new listeners. People think I'm doing this for ratings. What they don't know is I care nothing about ratings. I don't care one whit about ratings or listenership because I have it. I don't need any more. I've written 5 bestsellers. I don't need another one. There might be one, but I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't care about it. So, as I say, after the show was over last night, I went home, barred the gates, locked the door, loaded the guns, and I decided I would cook dinner for myself. So I normally don't eat a lot of meat, you know. That's why I'm still living. I've written so many books on nutrition and health. Thank God some of it must have worked. I take massive doses of vitamin C. Massive doses of vitamin E. I mean, when I say massive, 800 IUs a day. A certain multivitamin, which I'm not going to plug. I'm not selling anything to you right now. I take a lot of B6, things of that nature for many years. Eat a lot of garlic. Tons of vitamin C, approximately. I would say on the order of about 1 to 2 grams a day when I'm healthy, much more when I'm not feeling well. And it's worked for me. That's all. Thus far, it's worked for me. Tomorrow, I could be gone. But thus far, it's worked for me. Terrible genetic inheritance. Thus far, though, still good. Still good. No major surgery in my life, other than I was butchered when I was a child with a tonsillectomy that I didn't need by the butchers of the Bronx, who butchered the little boys as fast as they could. But other than taking away my T-cells and my tonsils, leaving me with a few minor illnesses, I'm in good shape.
Savage.
Normally, I have optimism and I bring it to you, but at a certain point, I have to bring realism to you. We are entering a new dark. We have entered a new dark age, and I don't know that we ever come out of this. We may fall into this horrible Brave New World movie of movie called 1984. Remember the movie version done in 1980, and around 1984 it came out. I actually watched a bit of it last week. I had to turn it off. I had terrible nightmares of the movie screen in everyone's house where Big Brother speaks to you and can watch your every move. Play this.
How does one man assert power over another? By making him suffer. Exactly. Power is inflicting pain and humiliation, otherwise you cannot be sure. Power is tearing human minds apart and putting them together again in new shapes of your own choosing. Power is not a means. It is an end. There is no loyalty except loyalty to the party. There is no love except love of Big Brother. All competing pleasures we will destroy. If you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
How far away are we away from that? How far are we away from that when Janet Napolitano in our own country brands returning war veterans as possible terrorists? How far are we away from this when I say Big Sis is amiss? How far away are we from this in this country? The left would have everyone forget history. The Republican Party was founded on the civil rights issue, but most people today have seemed to have forgotten that. Joining us today is Nina May, whose new documentary is entitled Reparations, Who Should Pay?, which looks into many of these political misconceptions. Nina May, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Please give us some background on your movie.
Well, there's a lot of discussion about the whole reparations issue, who should pay for the history of slavery in this country. And when you look at both political parties historically, in fact, we did an earlier movie called Emancipation, Revelation, Revolution. It looks at the history of civil rights movement in America and the role that both parties played. If you look at those histories, you'll see that the Democratic Party has always been a party of oppression. They were the ones that fought against liberating the slaves. Once they were liberated, they fought against the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments. They were the ones that instituted or founded the KKK. It's in the congressional record. They were the ones that instituted the Jim Crow laws, you know, on and on and on. Whereas on the other side, on the flip side, if you look at the Republican Party, it was founded in 1854 specifically to abolish slavery. It was abolitionists that came out of the Democratic Party and founded the Republican Party, and that was their key issue. In the first platform of the Republican Party, there were nine planks. Six of them dealt with civil rights for blacks. So you go forward now from 1854 to 1865, 11 years later, you've had the first Republican president, which was Abraham Lincoln, again an abolitionist. A war has been fought and won, and the slaves are liberated. And from that point on, the Democrats did not give up. They did everything they could to continue to oppress blacks. Johnson, who was the vice president of Abraham Lincoln, was a Democrat and totally against Reconstruction, totally against abolition, and made it very, very difficult for the Republicans in Congress, and now, of course, you know, controlled Congress because the Democrats were all Southern and all sort of being punished for, you know, wanting to secede from the Union on the issue of slavery. But when the Democrats did start getting power again about almost 10 years later, they immediately started ignoring the 13th Amendment was emancipation and end of slavery. 14th Amendment was civil rights. And the 15th Amendment was the right to vote. Again, these were all amendments to the Constitution. So when you talk about the Voting Rights Act of 1960, I mean, that's basically a rereading of the constitutional interpretation of the 15th Amendment, which is every person who was a former slave can have the right to vote. So I don't know whether the ambiguity is on that. It was pretty clear. But somehow the Democrats were able to change the meaning of the Constitution like they do all the time today. So what we want is a discussion on this whole issue of reparations, but we want it to be done from an historical perspective, not an emotional perspective. And we believe that if everyone feels that there should be reparations, that bill should be tacked to the door of the Democratic Party.
How has the Democratic Party changed their image to what it is now?
Yeah, that was a big question that we were trying to unravel when we were doing our first documentary, Emancipation, Revelation, Revolution, is how did the Republicans stop fighting and showing their rich history, and how did the Democrats turn on their head what they had done and now blame the Republicans for all of the the oppression and the racism that they basically have institutionalized in this country. And it's very fascinating. There were small, little, incremental things that happened that it started turning and turning and turning. I think one of the biggest things was the Civil Rights Act that was passed in 1964. The perception was that the Democrats were all supportive of the Civil Rights Act, when actually they were the ones that had been opposing it all the way along. They were the ones always that opposed any kind of civil rights, any bill that ever come along, even the Voting Rights Act. The majority of the people that voted in Congress for that were the Republicans, but again, because it was a Democrat president, the perception was that the Democrats had been fighting it all along, even though it was Everett Dirksen, the Republican, who pushed it through with the Democrats kicking and screaming the entire time. Look at the Southern governors in the South. Every one of them were Democrat, and every one of them were racist. So the South was opposed not just to blacks, but to Republicans. If you think about it, and I'm not an apologist for the Republican Party, I'm telling everyone they should vote, they should register as an independent, say a pox on both their houses because they both screwed up royally through the years. So, you know, don't please interpret any of this as being that I'm a spokesman out there for the Republican Party. I'm a spokesman for truth. I'm an apologist for the truth, not for a party. But if you look at historically what both of these parties were doing, historically, the Democrats were always in the business of oppressing and keeping people sort of on these little philosophical plantations, is what we call it. If you look at the whole era of Jim Crow, it was not whites that were keeping blacks from voting. That's just crazy. If you have someone who's going to vote for you, you could care less what color they are. It was Democrats keeping Republicans from voting, because every single black at the turn of the century was a Republican. So it's easy to see when a black came to the poll to know that they were going to be voting Republican. So it's okay, keep all these blacks from voting because they're going to vote Republican. You couldn't keep whites from voting because you didn't know if they were Democrat or Republican. So that's one of the biggest fallacies that has permeated our culture, is that the Jim Crow laws were racist, that were set up by white men against black men. Wrong, wrong, wrong. It was set up by Democrats against black Republicans.
Well, what is the most important fact you want people to learn from this video?
That the whole issue of racism in this country has not been a battle of white versus black, but right versus wrong. If you look at the people who gave their lives to abolish slavery in this country, they were all white men and women, because the slaves had no power at all. If it hadn't been for these white men and women giving their lives to fight other white men and women, we would not have ended slavery. And so that's the issue. And we have to take the emphasis off race, that it's white versus black, that it's, you know, white versus Hispanic. No, it's liberal philosophies versus conservative philosophies. It's a philosophy of freedom and liberty versus tyranny and oppression. And that's where we need to bring the debate back to. And we've gotten way off track on this whole racism issue. And if people aren't educated with the facts and armed with the truth, they're going to lose this debate.
Where can we find this movie?
If you go to errvideo.com, you can find information about both reparations, who should pay, and Emancipation Revelation Revolution. The reparations video was basically kind of a little sequel to ERR. ERR is an hour and a half. Reparations is about 22 minutes. It was basically a chapter that we just couldn't fit into the original movie. I would suggest that people see the whole ERR and then watch Reparations, because it's, again, sort of a sequel to a little bit more information that they're going to be getting out of ERR. We call it Emancipation Revolution ERR. And people are in it like Alveda King, who is Dr. Martin Luther King's niece, and Gloria Jackson, who's Booker T. Washington's great-granddaughter. You know, a lot of people that are speaking very openly and honest about this. And the interesting thing is the way they portray the situation that conservative blacks are in today is that they have been placed on a philosophical plantation. And these are their words. I mean, this is a documentary that has very little narration. It's basically the words of people who are feeling modern-day oppression based on their belief system. So it's a type of philosophical discrimination, not racial discrimination, but ironically, because they're black, they're sort of getting a twofer on this. Just people need to learn their history. If they don't learn the history, they're going to get totally deceived in every way on this issue and many, many other issues that are out there.
9 May, thanks for being on the Savage Nation. Difference between the Hitler of Iran, Ahmadinejad, and the other guy who nobody knows anything about. I believe it's Two-Card Monty. Thus far, I actually think it's Two-Card Monty, and it doesn't matter who wins, because it's still a mullah-controlled despot nation. It's not as though one is Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, and the other guy is a sterling, Western-loving individual. They're both heads of the same mullahs. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation, starting in Sacramento, California. Uzi, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I think either Obama's a coward, or he's dumb, or he's evil. If he's a coward, he doesn't have the balls to punch. The door is cracked open right now. It's closing. He needs to punch through. If he's dumb, he's noting the 1963 overthrow. We don't want a medal. All of those kids were born in the 80s. They could care less about the 1963. It's about life or death. Or if he's evil, if he's truly evil, he doesn't want the revolution in Iran. He wants to deal with the mullahs. The kids are ready to. It's not about the election, stupid. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, I understand. Yes, there's a huge youth population in Iran because the mullahs, the evil mullahs, encouraged families to produce children so they'd have more cannon fodder for future wars. Remember, at the time they were encouraging these kids' parents to procreate, they were at war with Iraq, and they were running, a million Iranians were run through minefields, you know that, and slaughtered in Iraqi minefields by the vermin who run Iran, who care nothing about human life, by the way. And this very same evil mindset is running Iran today, in my opinion. You're right, these youngsters don't care one whit about radical Islam. They'd rather be left alone to develop their own lives and their own society. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I got an email from a kid, an 18-year-old kid from Iran. I was just surfing YouTube and just trying to make comments about that girl that died. And he's like, what's up with you Americans? Why aren't you guys doing anything? And he's saying, oh, we don't
want to. The reason we're not doing anything is because we have an impotent communist socialist running America who is hard-focused only on promoting the neo-Marxist agenda on a domestic level. He only wants to turn America into a socialist nation. That is his one and only goal, and he's focused only on that. We better put that aside for a minute. The mindset of our so-called progressive idealists is dangerous to our sovereignty as well as our nation's survival. Our founding fathers put checks and balances into our governmental system to protect us from these very things that are going on now. Joining us is Dr. Peter Breggin, who has experience with this progressive mindset.
Bailouts and government takeovers, limiting executive pay, strengthening government oversight of business, universal health care, raising taxes on the rich, fighting pollution. Progressives can rejoice. But flush with your victory as you are, please reflect with me on some of the consequences. Starting as a young reformer decades ago, I have fought against racism, the abuse of women and children, and especially against oppressive practices within my own profession of psychiatry. I took on and continue to take on nasty adversaries, federal agencies like the FDA and the NIMH, the medical establishment, and the pharmaceutical industry. Over a lifetime, I have opposed forces that many feared and some hoped would crush me. As a younger man, I felt free to pursue these ideals while taking for granted that the America I knew would endure. It was as if I lived on a giant ocean liner, preoccupied with improving equality and justice among the crew and passengers, without wondering what keeps this ship afloat. But in case you haven't noticed, our ship is beginning to flounder under the weight of too much debt while it heads into a sea of fiscal and regulatory icebergs. Progressives could end up playing their band with idealistic fervor as the deck disappears beneath all of our feet. In my youth, I was sure that the world would be a much better place if only we could elect leaders who were, to put it bluntly, more like me. Although I'm still an idealist and a reformer, I no longer have faith that a team of well-meaning, like-minded people can take over the country and transform it for the better. I've since learned that the founders of this nation greatly feared leaders with good intentions. They knew the dangers of bending the rules to fit our personal ideals. They knew the threat to freedom from charismatic leaders. They repeatedly declared that the success of our government would ultimately depend on a high level of personal responsibility and devotion to liberty among our citizens. Progressives and liberals, if you want to give yourselves a real fright, consider this. At some point, and this is guaranteed, leaders who oppose you will take over this giant government apparatus that you are manufacturing for your own ends. In the hands of your enemies, the same government apparatus that you built will be turned on you to crush your freedom and your ideals.
Well, a lot of liberals think that they're the only ones with good intentions. Our founding fathers were not callous or self-centered, as they would lead you to believe.
That's right, Michael. The founders were extraordinarily principled people, idealists who risked everything they had for the sake of freedom. Not a single signer of the Declaration of Independence made money off the War of Independence, and many lost their homes, their fortunes, and even their lives. Probably no other group of individuals in history was so idealistically motivated as well as so successful in promoting human freedom. Their goal was to give individuals the freedom to take responsibility for themselves, but they were not indifferent to the needs of people. Ben Franklin, for example, led the creation of many institutions that continue to serve our citizens, from the U.S. Postal Service to the first ever local fire department, from a great university to community hospitals and libraries. Ben never patented his inventions. Instead, he freely gave humanity inventions like the lightning rod and the Franklin stove. Other founders initiated reforms in the penal code and prison system, and even in mental hospital care. But their overriding goal was the creation of a free space in which people could pursue their own lives for better or for worse.
Well, that's why they put these checks and balances in.
Returning to myself as a young reformer who had faith in leaders with good intentions like my own, I had no idea that the founders had looked carefully into this aspect of human nature and found it menacing. They created checks and balances to prevent well-intentioned idealists from using the government to impose their principles and values on other people. They built a limited government constrained by checks and balances, a government that would forever protect each person's right to pursue life, liberty, property, and happiness. The checks and balances that restrain government are being battered like the levees of New Orleans. The executive branch tries to flood the economy with money while it controls the activity of business. Innumerable czars are answerable only to their maker, who is Barack Obama. Empathic judges make policy instead of applying the law. The levees are about to fail, and this time the flood will wipe out America. Progressives, my fellow idealists, please reconsider this frantic bulldozing of the checks and balances that have made this government great and protected our freedom. You, in fact, are undermining the freedoms that have enabled us to voice our differing opinions. This brings us to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report: protect freedom, take responsibility at all times, express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities, become a source of love. This is psychiatrist Peter R. Bregan, MD, urging you to live like an American. You can find me and listen to all these reports and download the transcripts at Bregan.com. That's Bregin.com.
Dr. Bregan, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.